Today's shiur of Mishnah Berurah Yomi is Siman Shin Samech Gimel, and we are up to Sif Yud Dalet. O Yesh Hechsher, Acher L'Mavoi HaParutz Beruach Revius. There's another method of permitting a Mavoi with an open fourth border. Imagine like a driveway where the driveway is surrounded by three sides, two houses. Parallel to each other, and in the back a garage, and it's all enclosed there, except for the fourth border opening up into a Rishus Harabim, or out into a Carmelis. And that's just one example, but the example that they had would be, right, where you had those walls, were the walls of a Mavui, which were alleyways of different houses that would open up into the Mavui enclosed on three sides, with the fourth border opening up to the street. And so what's another method of permitting a mavoi with an open fourth border? It's to place a korah. That's what he says here. The korah she'anichenu al rosh ha-mavoi. It's to place a korah, a beam, over the beginning of the mavoi. That is the concept of a korah. And we're going to see the korah is not the top beam of a tzuras ha-pesach. Right, we talked before about the Tzuras HaPesach, where you have two lechis on both sides, and on top of that lechi, you have a crossbeam on top of the lechis, which would be, be on top of the lechi to give a Tzuras HaPesach. Here we're talking about placing it on top of the beginning of the Mavui, and it's going to work in and of itself as a Korah. And here it says, it continues on, V'tzarech she'yinichenu al kosle ha-mavui, and it must be positioned upon the walls of the mavui. Aval im not, shtei yisedos eitzel ha-mavui b'chutz, afilu b'samach lo, v'niach aleihem pasul. However, if one sticks two pegs right outside the mavui, as if like it was coming out of the walls, of the edges of the walls of the mavui, and then you go ahead and rest the korah upon them, even though they are right next to it, it is still going to be puzzle. Let's see. The Mishnah Berurah is going to spell it all out. Sif katan mem tes. Bikaira. Shal yedei ze yeh heker shelo yavo lachlif ulataltal b'shul rabin gemura v'gam shelo yavo lataltal mimenu lachutz. Its purpose is to serve as an indicator in order to prevent people from confusing the mavui with the rishus harabim, and therefore coming to carry there as well, and from inadvertently carrying from the mavui to the outside. This added point that he has at the end here is apparently based on Rabbeinu Yohanan, who adds this explanation of why the chachamim asked carrying in a three-walled enclosure, in addition to the first explanation presented by Rashi. So once again, his first reason he gives is in order to prevent people from confusing the mavui with the rishus harabim and thereby coming to carry there as well. That's Rashi. And the second thing from Rabbi Yonasan is from inadvertently carrying from the mavui to the outside. That's the second concern brought down by the Rabbeinu Yonasan. And now we continue on. Sifkat Nun al rosh hamavui rotzono lomar. That is to say, at the front, b'ktzei hamavui, at the front of the mavui. V'im hemidu b'emtza hamavui, if a korah was placed over the middle of a mavui, he says, Ayin lekamon, see below, b'sif lamed beis. We'll get to it. We get to lamed beis. We got a while till we get there. But then it's going to discuss what happens if you have a korah not at the front of the mavui, meaning at the front, right where it's going to, right where it opens up out into the street, into the Rishus HaRabim or into the Carmelis. That's where you put the mavui, at the top over there of the mavui, at the front of the mavui. If it's placed over the middle of the mavui, we'll see later in Sif Lamed Beis. And we continue on. Sif Katan Aleph, Aval Im Na'atz V'chule. If one sticks two pegs right outside the mavui, i.e., Hainu, Shetachav Shnei Yisedos, B'Shnei Aksalim Mizeh U'Mizeh, L'Tzad Lushus Harabim. He drove two pegs into the fronts of the walls on both sides of the mavui. U'Mashekasav, and what he writes, Afilu Samuch Lo. Right when he writes by right next to it, Hainu Shehayisedos Hayu Ktsaros Ma'od, The Shulchan Aruch means that the projecting pegs were very short. So when the korah is placed upon them, it is right against the wall with no space in between them. And even this is puzzle, as the korah has to be on the mavoi walls themselves. Right? That's what he says. Vatam the korah al gabe ksalim ba'inon. Has to be on top of the mavoi themselves, and she'ein nires shabala hachshir ha-mavoi ela kishu toch chalalo shel mavoi. This is because it is not obvious that the korah's purpose is to permit the mavoi, unless it is within the mavoi's airspace. She'ein derech shum tikra v'shum korah lasisa ela agave aksalim v'lo mibechutz. Again, this is because it's not obvious that the korah's purpose is to permit the mavui unless it's within the mavui's airspace. Because any ceiling, this is what he's saying now, any ceiling or overhead beam associated with an enclosure would be placed over its walls and not outside it. So what's happening here is, in other words, the korah can serve as an indicator only if its association with the mavui is apparent. Since an overhead entity associated with an enclosure would typically be situated over the enclosure's airspace, the korah must likewise be situated over the mavui's airspace. In fact, this is what the Ritva points out in Chesamad Beis in Erevin. The Mishnah Brura now continues on, and he says, the dafka korah, avalechi lo ba'inan toch halalo shal mavui, el afilu chutz l'chalal ha-mavui. He says here, you should note, this applies only for a korah, but a lechi does not have to be inside the mavui specifically. It doesn't have to be inside the mavui specifically. It can be placed outside the mavui, as we saw in Sif Yud Gimel, that if it can be distinguished, meaning that if it can be distinguished by the people outside the mavui, it's going to be good. And what's the basic reason? The time of the milsa, the lechi afilu omed b'chutz nikar shabala hachshir hamavoi mashein came b'kayra v'chanoim le'el. This is because a lechi is distinguishable. This is very important as a mechanism permitting the mavoi, even if it is situated outside, whereas a korah is not, as explained above. Meaning, a lechi's association with the mavoi is apparent even if the lechi is situated outside the mavoi, because a lechi, the idea here is that a lechi stands on the ground. On the ground, there are various types of items that might be associated with an enclosure, but still situated outside it, like, for example, a door or a fence. Therefore, the lechi's association with the mavui is distinguishable even if it is outside the mavui and is therefore valid there as well. But when it comes to the korah, it is not obvious that the korah's purpose is to permit the mavui unless it is within the mavui's airspace, because any ceiling or overhead beam associated with an enclosure, again, would be placed over its walls, not outside it. We continue on into Sif Katan Nun Beis, puzzle. So it's going to be puzzle, we said, if one sticks two pegs right outside the mavui, even though right next to it and rests the korah upon them, it is puzzle. So comes the Mishnah Brura and says, "Im not shtei says b'karka samach l'kaseh amavui mizel mizem v'chutz v'niach hakorah alein kosher mitam lechi." It's going to be kosher as a lechi. It says something interesting. If someone would, however, drive two pegs that are 10 tefachim high into the ground, right, mamish right in front of the mavui walls on both sides, and places the korah on top of them, it would be good. It would be kosher. Not by virtue of the korah, you know, it's interesting he sets this up, but because each of the pegs can serve as a lechi, he's saying. Means the pegs supporting the korah are valid lechayayim, because a lechi does not need to be situated inside the mavui, as explained in the previous Sif Katan. Now, it's interesting. He quotes here the Ola Shabbos, Eliyahu Rabbi, and other Achronim. And if you check out the Sharet Tzion, he expresses surprise that these Achronim did not note that it is effective if you do that as a Surah HaPesach as well. I mean, he's saying, you have two Lechayim and a Korah above, and it would therefore be effective even for a width of more than 10 Amos. So the Chazan Ish, Ayin, Tezayin through Yud Zayin and Pei Vav, hey, he paskins that in a way that resolves this problem. He paskins that unlike a lechi, a tzuras pesach cannot effectively enclose an area unless the posts on both sides somewhat enclose the interior of the enclosure. However, if you take out the bach in shin chaf gimel chaf vav, the ika lemedak, the ramaskel, he paskins otherwise. Check out the Kilis Yankiv in Perek Vav, and he discusses this much more. Let's move right there. We are up to Sif Tes Vav. He says the karev must be placed for the express purpose of permitting the mavui. If it was not established for this purpose, it is possible. Right. So he says if it was not established for this purpose, it's going to be possible even if it was designated to be used as such before Shabbos. Sif katan nun gimel aval imlo. See, right? He says if it was not established for this purpose of permitting the mavui, it's going to be puzzle. And he says, for example, for example, if the korah was placed across the walls for the purpose of reinforcing the walls, or for similar purpose, or for similar reasons or purposes, this is an example of it was not established for the purpose of permitting the mavui. And he continues on, even if it was designated to be used as such before Shabbos, like by the lechi. Lechi, we said, look what he says. Even though we learned that a lechi alam in the elav, right, if it's a self-set lechi, it's going to be effective once it becomes designated to serve as such before Shabbos. A lechi is different. Shani hasn't lechi mishum mechitza. Why is lechi different? Because its function is to serve as a wall. Lechi mishum mechitza. That's the reason why lechi alam in the elav is okay. Abaye. And we know that a wall that came about by itself is valid. However, a korah of a korah mishum heker. Here's the key split. A korah, however, is purely meant to serve as an indicator, not having a halachic din of a wall. And therefore, its significance. And therefore, its significance is not manifest if it was not established specifically for that purpose. He says, I am prima godim, see them in prima godim, shemetzadeh, dafilo yakor rechova arba tzvachim, gam keilom mahani vein beralacha. He says, you see the prima godim who leans towards paskening that this korah is ineffective, even if it is four tzvachim wide. He says, see the beralacha, meaning even though with a four tzvachim can compensate for a korah that lacks the required strength, as we're going to see coming up in Sif Yud Zayin, it cannot compensate for a korah that was not placed for the express purpose of serving as a korah. What the Beralacha basically goes through in the Prima Gadim is that the Prima Gadim paskins that a width of four tefachim cannot compensate for the fact that it was not placed for the purpose of permitting the mavui. There is a shita that he brings down that if it is also able to bear a coat of plaster, then there may be indications in the Rajba, that it would be effective. We move on here. Sif Tes Zayin. Korah Zusha Amarnu Svicha Shir. This aforementioned Korah has a minimum required size. What is that minimum required size? We'll see soon enough. Ulafichach Imasa Ma'atse Asherah. Therefore, if it consists of wood, unlike the Lechi, from an Asherah that was used for idolatry, the wood, Psula is going to be invalid. Why? Once again, we've learned the halacha earlier, now it's going to apply. The cave under the Lesreifa Kaima Katute Mechkachira. Because since it's fated to be burned, because it's Ate Asherah, it is viewed as if it was already burnt, and therefore its original size has already been broken up into pieces, halachic pieces. We look at the Mishnah Brura, Sif Katan Nun Hei, Sri Chashir. There is a minimum requirement, which we're going to see coming up in Sif Yud Zayin. It's the next Sif. He says here, therefore, right, if it consists of wood from an Asherah, it's going to be possible. Look at the Mishnah Brura. This is true for anything that has a required size, because anything right slated to be burnt is considered as having no size, since it's viewed as if it was already burnt. What's an example of this? The Mishnah Brura now goes on. For example, where you have the four tefach panel at the one side of a chotzer, right? Like, remember, by a non-mavui, you need to have either a four tefach panel at the one side of the chotzer, or the two panels of a tefach, each at both sides. Right? We saw this earlier in Sif Bais. It's talking about Atzei Yashera specifically to a Avodah Zarah worshipped by a Jew. In that case, She'ein Lo Bittel, in which case it cannot be effectively annulled. What the Mishnah Berurah here is referring to is the halacha stated in the Shulchan Aruch in Yeredeia, Kuf Mem Zayin, Sifim Aleph and Beis. The halacha is that an Avodah Zarah has to be burnt. However, if the worshipper annuls the idol, the vatel, the avodah zara, it loses its offensive status and does not need to be burnt. Being vatel and avodah zara entails, how do you do it? You either break it, or significantly mutilate it, or you sell it to a Jew who is expected to destroy it to use its raw material. That's how you're vatel it. That's the Rambam in the Chazavodas Kachavim, who matzis halacha perik ches halacha. Yud. Now, this, however, is only true for a non-Jew's Avodah Zarah idol. It's only true for a non-Jew's idol. But an idol, an Avodah Zarah, that was either worshipped by a Jew or belongs to a Jew, even though it was never worshipped by the Jew, but only by non-Jews who owned it previously, that can never become batel. So, he says here, Mayatzei Asherish Adla Yisrael, She'ein La Bittel, O Afilu Shel Akum, Uktsatsa Yisrael. So we're saying here that we're talking specifically to an Avodah Zarah worship by a Jew, in which case it cannot be effectively annulled. Or, as he says, even to that of a non-Jew, if a Jew cut down the tree, and then after he cut down the tree, cut the Yisrael, because if it was cut down by a non-Jew, that itself constitutes bittul, as we see in Yeredeia, kuf mem vav siv vav. So what he's saying here, all right, the afilu shel akum ktsasa Yisrael unitala l'skaisba that yidezen nasa v'skal chom shel Yisrael the ain la bittul ulaficha chaminan dekatute mechtat. So he's saying we're talking here that it's either referring to an idol worship by a Jew, in which case it cannot be effectively annulled, or even to that of a non-Jew, if a Jew cut down the tree and then lifted it up in order to take possession of it. Also, if it collapsed by itself and then was then taken by a Jew, the Shaar Tzion points out, would be the same thing. And this example that we're giving here to Mishnah Berurah is actually presented by the Shulchan Aruch without any further elaboration. And the Achronim, they're Cholek, they're in Tav Kuf Pei Vav Sif Gimel, as to what exactly this means. The Magen Avraham, he holds that even if the Jew stole it, it is deemed his in the sense that it can no longer be annulled by a non-Jew. Even though the stolen object is not legally his, the fact that he bears legal responsibility, he has an achrayus for the object, that associates it with him to a certain extent. However, the Taz, this is how the Prima Gadim understands him, he holds that this applies only if the non-Jew granted it to the Jew as a gift after he cut it down, but if the Jew stole it, in which case it is not rightfully his, it can still be annulled by a non-Jew. Therefore, it is a valid korah, even if it has not yet been annulled, even though there is no bittul to it, because it's not inevitably destined to be burnt. All agree, however, that if the Jew borrowed it from the non-Jew after cutting it down, it is still considered the non-Jew's, and it can be annulled. So therefore, it is a valid korah. So that's what's being said here. Again, Mishnah Berurah basically is saying that this halacha, that a tree that was used for idolatry is puzzle. He's saying it specifically applies to an idol worshipped by a Jew, in which case it cannot be effectively annulled, or even to that we just discussed right now, of a non-Jew, if a Jew cut down the tree and then lifted it up in order to take possession of it, as opposed to if it was cut down by a non-Jew, that itself constitutes bittul, as stated in Yeredeia, kuf mem vav vav. Then he says, once taken by a Jew, right? Once it's taken, when it's talal is a koyspa dal yedezen nase avodes kochavim shal Yisrael dein la bittel. Because then, once taken by a Jew, it has the status of a Jew's idol, which can never be annulled. Therefore, l'ficha chamin da kadutei mechtat. Therefore, he says, it's as if it has size has already been broken apart, since there's no recourse to burning it. However, he says, however, the Jew did not lift it to take it for himself. It is a non-Jew's idol and can therefore be annulled. It came in the Yesh L'Bittel, since it is Bittel, lo aminan be katute mechtat, afilu kodem shenis batel. Since it is not inevitably fated to be burnt, as it can be annulled, go through Bittel, it is not considered to have been broken apart, even if it has not yet been annulled. We've been translating Bittel here as annulling the status of the Avodah Zarah. Let's move on to Sif Yud Zayin. Sif Yud Zayin. And now I'm going to get to the Shir of a Kaira. Shir a Kaira. Rach v'tefach v'ovya kol shehu. The Shir of a Kaira has to measure a tefach in width. It has to measure a tefach in width. And he continues on. The ovya kol shehu. But any thickness at all would suffice. So he says any thickness at all is going to suffice in terms of the shear, but it has a different requirement. It has to be strong enough to hold the block. It has to be strong enough to hold the block. If it can't hold the block, okay, then it's not going to be good. So he says it has to be strong enough to hold a block. That's the type made from a 3x3 tefach, okay, brick split into two, right? Kedei lekabel ariach shichatzi levena shel shlosha tefachim. Now, if it's strong enough to hold a block and it's made from a 3x3 tefach brick split in two, then any thickness at all will suffice. That's the type of block that it has to be able to hold. But if the Kore, he says, is 4 tefachim wide, it does not need to be strong enough to support a block. We'll see this now all spelled out in the Mishnah Brura. Sif katan nun ches, rochva tefach. He says it has to have the tefach in width. That's the shear. And he says, he says, even though its size must enable it to hold a block which is 1.5 tefachim wide, the excess half of a tefach can be sustained by securing the quarter of a tefach that protrudes on each of the two sides with cement. Okay, this is the Gemara in Erevin Yudalat Amid Aleph. And he's basically saying here that this is not to say that cement has to actually be applied. All it means is that a mere tefach is enough, since this would be the typical width of a beam that would be used to support such blocks. Someone forming this type of structure would presumably attach the blocks with cement, which would then provide the lacking half tefach. Interesting. That would provide the lacking half tefach, even though its size and principle has to enable it to hold a block which is 1.5 tefachim wide. That's his point here in this Mishnah Brura, Sif Katan Nun Ches. And we now move on to Sif Katan Nun Tes, Lekabel Ariach. It has to, he says that any thickness would suffice as long as it's strong enough to hold a block, right? The type made from a 3x3 tefach brick split in two. So here he's going to spell this all out. Sif Katan Nun Tes. This means as follows. He's saying that multiple blocks, each 3 tefachim long and 1.5 tefachim wide, lying all along its length, which extends all across the Mavui's entrance. And he says, "Umikom makom im haya rochav pesach hamavui eser amos ein tzarich." So he points out that you should note that if the entrance to the Mavui is 10 amos wide, the Kohar does not have to be strong enough to support blocks laid along its entire length. Rather, it's sufficient if it can support blocks and laid along 9 amos, plus a bit more protruding on each side. Shein shmona esar arichin le'archon. And this amounts to 18 blocks lying lengthwise. Okay, try to imagine this. The fisha koras teisha amos u'shte mashuin. You got to be a little bit of a digital here. The fisha koras teisha amos u'shte mashuin materes b'mavui shal rochav eser amos midin lavud. Because this is adequate because a korah 9 amos long plus a bit more at each end, that is going to suffice to permit a mavui, which is 10 amos wide, by means of lavud. Da'ayinu shal takia pachus mishol ha'tfachim b'kot ozeh, u'pachus mishol ha'tfachim b'kot ozeh, u'kid l'kameh b'sif chavalev. Right, it's adequate because a korah 9 amos long plus a bit more at each end, that's going to suffice to permit a mavui, which is 10 amos wide, by means of lavud, if it is centered so that it reaches to within 3 tzvachim of the wall on both sides, as stated below in Sif Chaf Aleph. Batam shetzricha lekabelas arichim shim lo kein. And what's the reason that it has to be capable of supporting these blocks? The reason that it must be capable of supporting these blocks is that otherwise its significance, its significance as an indicator is not going to be as apparent because the passerby in Rishus HaRabim might think that it was placed there momentarily. But when it is strong and sturdy enough to serve as a base for this type of structure, it is readily apparent to all that it has been set there as a fixed part of the structure. So let's just review again quickly. What he's saying here is that any thickness at all suffices, provided it's strong enough to hold a block, the type made from a 3x3 tefach brick split in two. If the korah is 4 tefachim wide, it doesn't need to be strong enough to support a block. Mr. Brewer points out that we're talking here about multiple blocks, each 3 tefachim long and 1.5 tefachim wide, lying all along its length, which extends all across the mavui's entrance. That's what it has to be able to support. And if he says that if the entrance of the mavui is 10 amos wide, then the korah does not have to be strong enough to support blocks laid along its entire length, but it's going to be sufficient if it can support blocks laid along 9 amos plus a bit more protruding on each side, which would then amount to 18 blocks lying lengthwise. And this is okay because the korah 9 amos long plus a little bit more, okay, suffices to permit a mavui, which is 10 amos wide, based on lavud, if it is centered so that it reaches to within 3 tefachim of the wall on both sides. And he explains that the reason that it has to be capable of supporting these blocks is that otherwise its significance as an indicator, as a heker, is not so apparent, because the passerby, and just a rabbi, might think that it was placed there momentarily. But when it's strong and sturdy enough to serve as a base for this type of structure, it's readily apparent to all that it has been set there as a fixed part of the structure. Now, the basis for the halacha that he quotes here in the brackets here is really the Rajba, and the Chazanish happens to note that the Rajba made a point of specifying that 18 blocks are required in order to invoke lavud at the ends. And he infers from this that once lavud has been employed for the two ends of the korah, it cannot be invoked to allow additional gaps along the length of the korah. If it could be employed all along the korah's length, a beam that could support less than 18 blocks would suffice as well, the Chazanish says, as long as it could support enough blocks to be distanced within 3 tefachim of each other. And presumably the reason we not allow for more lavud is because the whole reason the korah has to be able to support these blocks is in order to grant the korah the semblance of a permanent structure, as the Mishnah Berurah actually explains. And if it can only support blocks that are spaced, it lacks that permanent appearance. However, if you check out the Ran, Yidal Aleph there, Dibra Maschil, the Chen Shtei Koras HaMasimais, he explicitly states that the numbers were not intended literally, and we do indeed allow additional spaces along the korah's length within the range of lavud. And it's also of note that the Rajma himself in his parish expressed uncertainty to what extent lavud can be applied along a korah. Check out the Meiri there as well. Ad Khan today. That is enough for today.